By the time he reached his own rooms in the sanatorium, the sun had gone behind the crater wall. The servants had lit oil lamps, and the bowl that contained his evening meal was warming over the glowing charcoal in the copper brazier. After he had eaten sparingly, then brewed and drunk a bowl of the coffee grown by Dr. Assem, he settled himself cross-legged on the sleeping mat and composed himself for meditation. This was his nightly routine, and the watcher at the hidden peephole would find nothing unusual in it. At last he doused the oil lamp, and the room was plunged into darkness. Within a short time the aura of the man behind the peephole faded as he left his station for the night. Taita waited a little longer, then relit the lamp, but turned down the wick until it was only a soft glow. He held the periapt in his cupped hands and concentrated on the mental image of Lostris, who had become Fen. He opened the locket and took out the locks of her hair, the old and the new. His love for her was the central redoubt upon which his defences against Eos hinged. Holding the curls to his lips, he affirmed that love. "Shield me, my love," he prayed. "Give me strength." He felt the power that flowed from the soft hair warm his soul, then laid it back in the locket and took out the fragment of red stone they had removed from Meron's eye. He placed it in the palm of his hand and concentrated upon it. "It is cold and hard," he whispered, "as is my hatred of Eos." Love was the shield, hatred the sword. He affirmed both. Then he placed the stone in the locket with the hair and hung the periapt round his neck. He blew out the lamp and lay down. But sleep would not come. Disjointed memories of Fen haunted him. He remembered her laughing and crying. He remembered her smiling and teasing. He remembered her serious expression as she studied some problem he had set for her. He remembered her body lying warm and soft beside him in the night, the gentle sigh of her breathing and the beat of her heart against his. "I must see her once more. It may be the last time." He sat up on his mat. "I dare not cast for her, but I can overlook her." These two astral manoeuvres were similar, but in essence very different. To cast was to shout to her across the ether, when an unwelcome listener might detect the disturbance. To overlook was to spy upon her secretly, like the watcher at the peephole. Only a savant and seer like Eos might be able to detect it, as he had detected the watcher. However, he had refrained from any astral activity for so long now that the witch might no longer be on the alert. "I must see Fen. I must take the chance." He held the periapt in his right hand. The locks of hair were part of Fen and would guide him to her. He pressed the periapt to his forehead and closed his eyes. He began to rock from side to side. The locket in his right hand seemed to take on some strange life of its own. Taita felt it pulsing softly in rhythm to his own heartbeat. He opened his mind and let the currents of existence enter freely, swirling round him like a great river. His spirit broke free of his body, and he soared aloft as though he were borne on the wings of a gigantic bird. Far below he saw fleeting, confused images of the forests and plains. He saw what looked like an army on the march, but as he drew closer he saw it was a slow-moving column of refugees, hundreds of men, women and children trudging along a dusty road or packed into cumbersome ox carts. There were soldiers with them and men on horseback, but Fen was not among the multitude. He moved on, his spirit-soul ranging wide, holding the amulet as his lodestone, searching until the tiny cluster of buildings at Mutangi appeared in the distance ahead. As he drew closer, he realized with mounting alarm that the village was in ruins, blackened and charred. The astral memory of a massacre hung like fog over the village. He sifted through the traces, but with surging relief found that neither Fen nor any others of his band were among the dead. They must have escaped from Mutangi before it had been destroyed. He let his spirit soul range wider until he detected a pale glimmer of her presence in the foothills of the Mountains of the Moon, far to the west of the village. He followed the gleam and at last hovered above a narrow valley hidden in the forests that covered the lower slopes of the mountains. "She is down there." He searched closer until he discovered a picket of horses. Windsmoke was among them, and so was Whirlwind. Just beyond the horses, firelight glowed from the narrow entrance to a cave. Nakontu sat above the entrance with Imbali beside him. Taita allowed his spirit soul to drift inside. "There she is." He picked out the form of Fen, stretched on a sleeping mat beside the small fire. Sidudu lay on one side of her, Merin beside Sidudu, then Hilto. Taita was so close to Fen that he could hear her breathing. He saw that she had laid out her weapons close at hand. All the other members of the small party were also fully armed. Fen was lying on her back. She wore only a linen loincloth and was bare to the waist. He gazed upon her tenderly. Since last he had seen her, her body had become even more womanly. Her breasts were larger and rounder, the nipples still tiny, but alert and darker pink now. The last vestiges of puppy fat had melted from her belly. The hollows and swells of her flesh were shadowed and highlighted by the low flames of the fire. In repose, her countenance was lovely beyond his fondest memories. Taita realized with astonishment that she must be now at least 16. The years he had spent with her had passed so quickly. The pattern of her breathing changed, and slowly she opened her eyes. They were green in the glow from the hearth fire, but darkened as she sensed his presence. She raised herself on one elbow, and he could feel her making ready to cast for him. They were close to the cloud gardens. He must stop her before she betrayed her position to the hostile thing up there on the mountain. He let his spirit sign appear in the air before her eyes. She started up as she realized he was watching her. She stared directly at the sign, and he commanded her to remain silent. She smiled and nodded. She formed her own spirit sign in reply to his. The delicate tracing of the water lily bloom entwined with his falcon in a lover's embrace. He stayed with her a moment more. The contact had been fleeting, but to tarry longer might be deadly. He placed a single last message in her mind. "I will return to you soon. Very soon." Then he began to withdraw. She felt him going, and the smile died on her lips. She held out a hand as if to hold him back, but he dared not stay. With a start, he jerked back into his own body and found himself sitting cross-legged on the sleeping mat in his room at the Cloud Gardens. The sorrow of parting from her, after so brief a contact, was a heavy weight on him.